St. Ambrose University. We are talking with Dr. Andy Axup.
Axup.
I always pronounce everybody's name wrong. And coming up soon on November 8th, we have the STEM Merit Badge Challenge. And it's kind of the first big Catan District Merit Badge University. And not only are we excited to have that, but also Ian and I talk often about how we think that STEM is kind of the future of our program and what our scouts and what our kids need to be learning. And so it's great to have this opportunity to offer in Catan. And one of the awesome people that we have steering the ship here is Dr. Axup. Axup.
Think of it as A-C-T-S. Up.
Axup.
He's writing it down right now. You can't see it, but he is. No, we absolutely are.
That's how it works.
And we met Andy, Dr. Axup, through Bob Christopher, who's been one of our big volunteers in Catan. He's head of security here on campus, and also I think he's assistant dean of students. I believe
right.
That's his title. But anyway, he said, "I got this guy." I said, "We really need to have staff buy-in. We could have it here, but if we don't have the staff buy-in, it's not going to mean much."
Yeah.
And he thought it was a great idea, and so he brought it to you and convinced you, paid you. I don't know what he did to get you on board, but we are so thankful to have you. You have a scouting background. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm actually from this area as far as scouting goes. My father was in the Army. We moved here when he left the Army back in 1969, so I consider myself a local boy.
Yeah.
I was in Scout, Boy Scout, well, Cub Scouts and then the Boy Scouts, and I finished my Eagle in November of 73.
Cool, awesome.
So, and then after that, the council was doing a leadership development corps.
Yeah.
I don't know if that, and so I was involved with the first, they invited all the recent
Eagles
to help out there. And so I served 2 years on the camp development staff.
So,
for
Andy,
that.
What would that equate to? NYLT? Or what would that...
Probably, yeah.
Okay, so something that we have now is NYLT.
National Youth Leadership Training.
So something
probably
similar to that.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
were some of the things... Do you remember what some of the things you did in that?
I remember that this is in the days of Roy Redman.
Who?
Roy Redman.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, way back then.
Yeah.
Papa Roy. There was a series of little seminars that we had to train up on to give to our patrols.
Okay.
So my first year I was just a patrol leader. Mm-hmm. And there was the one I remember was getting and giving information. And this was the one Roy demonstrated to us to show us how these were supposed to go. And
sure,
so
wow.
The one thing I remember from that was he said, reach down and tie your shoe. And it's like, well, you didn't really tie your shoe. You tied your shoe lace. And, of course, I wonder how that worked now when the Velcro and everything. So, but that was something I remember. And we then spent the week out at camp, Loud Thunder, mm-hmm. and had the other basically, it was a patrol of patrol leaders and troop leaders that were in, and we did some team building activities.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The post in the creek with the
the
swing it around to get across and things like that. And so it was just a great time. And then the second year, I was on the Corps. Leadership staff. So I was the senior patrol leader for the second year.
So this is early 70s.
Yeah, 74, 75.
Okay. So, like, at the time, Loud Thunder didn't have a pool or a dining hall.
Oh, it had a pool.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. But
I remember the mile swim, man.
Oh, wow.
Chipping the ice off. I don't know if it's an indoor pool now, but it was outdoor then.
Outdoor.
No, we had the pool, and the dining hall was there.
Okay.
Down where the Rangers house is that still there?
Oh, that's probably all the Cub Camp.
It's down in Lower Camp, right?
Yeah,
but so right by the lake where the canoes
and
all, sailboats.
Yeah, so now it's all, they use the upper camp as, that's where the dining hall and the pool is now.
Oh, they moved it.
It's all, yeah.
Oh, how about that?
They did that about
different 80, pool.
89,
90. Oh, okay.
Because after Mineata
closed
yeah. Loud Thunder's where they had, they put the
put
dining hall and yeah. everything. Because Loud Thunder used to be a, more of a patrol, like you cooked your for yourself
oh, yeah.
at camp.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and Mineata was where they had the dining hall and you would go
oh,
have
really?
Meals and
I
stuff.
I never knew that.
And
really?
So when Mineata got out of the picture, which Mineata's still up there, it's just not a it's not a scout camp anymore. It's a
but we still use it. I know environmental Milwaukee center. District
oh,
still
right.
uses
and,
it.
And so all those buildings are all up there still, mm-hmm. but now they've built
that.
A yeah. So
but
now
what
we'll,
I what
we'll
I remember
take you down to Loud Thunder and show you around.
Yeah, what I remember about going out to Loud Thunder is we were always late registering for camp. And so we got Lone Wolf, which probably isn't
it's,
even on the map anymore.
It's still on the map, but there's no signs that say where it...
But you
see,
have an idea where it is?
You'll see maps that have it on there.
And we got so upset about having to lug our food pack every day out there, because it's a mile and a half,
oh,
2 miles
you, you've
out
been
there.
Out there, but I don't. You,
yeah.
I
wouldn't know that's what
you
it
wouldn't
was.
Know that's what it
yeah.
was. Yeah.
So eventually we got our act together and we got Longbow, which was smack dab in the middle.
Yeah.
And that was great.
Well, Andy,
but,
I know it sounds like you have really fond memories of scouting.
Love it.
And that really helps us out as far as putting passion behind this event that we got coming
sure.
up. You have... Sounds like a true appreciation for the program that, that served you well and is
yeah.
still serving youth today. But there are some things that I wanted to touch on. How did you get to St. Ambrose? I know we briefly talked about this before we started recording today, but you got your Eagle, went on to school. Where'd you go to school and so on and so forth?
Well, I did my undergraduate work at Purdue University, and I'm went in as a chemistry major and left as a chemistry major. So that's kind of, yeah. Actually, I thought I was going to be a civil engineer because I wanted to build a bridge across the Strait of Gibraltar. That was my goal in life. Not that there's any need for a bridge across the Strait of Gibraltar.
What do you want to be, Billy? I want to be a police cop. What do you want to be, Andy? I want to build a bridge across the Strait of Gibraltar.
He had a goal.
Yeah.
He had a dream.
Yeah. Well, civil engineering, right? Well, my father's a mechanical engineer, and he said, you know, you really ought to look at this science stuff instead of engineering. And I said, why? Mm-hmm. And he said, that's why. If you were an engineer, you'd say, how? And so I picked chemistry for no really good reason other than that I enjoyed it in high school. And so I reaffirmed my affection for the subject my first semester in college. I had a fantastic professor, and I stayed a chemist the whole way. And one of the nice things that happened when I was at Purdue is they had a work-study program.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent 3 work periods, which added up to about a year, over 3 years,
yeah.
Working in the Eastman Kodak Research Labs in Rochester, New York.
Okay.
And so that was, wow, this is this is great. And I actually had every intention of staying at Kodak.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they had indicated that to make sure that I was in the application process
yeah.
before I left. And then they, my supervisor there said, you know, Andy, you ought to consider going to grad school. And so I took that to heart, and I went to graduate school instead. And he said, you can come back later. And so I went to the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena.
And you're all over.
Yeah.
All over
well,
the country.
See, one view of graduate school is... You don't have to live there forever, even
right.
though graduate school tends to last a long time. But I looked at it as an opportunity to live in a part of country that I didn't really... Big cities aren't my thing.
Sure.
So being in L.A. for 4 years was seemed like it was a manageable thing. While I was there, the Olympics were in L.A., and that
yeah,
was
that would be awesome.
Tremendous. They did such a good job convincing everyone to leave town those weeks that we could drive from Pasadena downtown in 15 minutes. And it's like, Where is everybody?
Now you can't do that in an hour and a half.
Yeah. So it was just a tremendous experience to be out there. And then when I finished graduate school, I went out east to work for the Operations Evaluation Group of the Center for Naval Analyses. And that's basically a operations research organization that provides support for the Navy. And I spent 3.5 years at sea doing that, which was a lot of fun.
What's the experience like as a civilian going on to Navy boat?
Yeah, I had a slightly different relationship. I wasn't a strict civilian.
Okay.
Insofar as we had the bullpen where all the radar and electronic contractor techs
mm-hmm.
stayed. And they work for on that piece of equipment.
Sure.
I was attached to the command staff.
Okay.
And so I was part of the admiral staff, and I worked in operations and intelligence. And I had reporting authority directly to the admiral, even though I worked in these other places. So he if he asked me something, I talked to him directly. And so I was part of that staff community, and they... It's not that they treated me as a military officer,
sure.
but they certainly treated me as part of the family.
You had
that
a status.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I was with them, and of course the staff had a judge advocate general who mm-hmm. was a lawyer, and so they put the lawyer and me together, figuring put the two eggheads in one place so they don't contaminate the rest of the staff. So I then moved back to the area. Wanted to spend more time with my parents as they were getting up in years.
Yeah.
And then, so plan B was to start teaching. And,
yeah.
and I did some adjuncting at some of the colleges here, and I did some visiting professorships. And eventually I came to St. Ambrose as the chemical safety officer and lab coordinator. And 1 month after I arrived, I got a knock on the door, and the EPA was having a surprise visit.
Want to make sure your affairs are in order, right?
Wow, that was a real eye-opener. And so hazardous material management and safety became a really
priority.
Part of my, the good news is that St. Ambrose is such an open place that I had met all in less than 1 month, I had met all the people I needed to know.
Wow.
And so when the inspector asked, "Now, who does this?" I took them over. They said, "Hi, Andy," and I introduced them. And then we went somewhere else. They said, "Hi, Andy," and I introduced them. And so, I mean, I don't know how well it would have worked if Ambrose hadn't been that
right.
open and welcoming an
right.
environment.
Right.
And, consistently to this day that we receive feedback that everyone's so friendly and whatnot. And it's
cool. yeah.
it's really a pleasant environment. And then about eight years ago, I moved to the faculty full-time, and I've been full-time faculty since.
And then about 6 months ago, 7 months ago, Bob Christopher comes and...
Yeah,
twists your arm and says,
"Well,
I
met Bob Christopher through our safety committee. That's
mm-hmm.
that's how we know each other. And in addition to that, we've been developing our emergency operation plans and things
yep.
like that. So I see Bob once a week, whether I want to or not. But anyway, in just chatting." He indicated he's involved, his son's in scouts.
Mm-hmm,
and,
yeah.
and so their Weblos troop needed to work on their scientist merit badge. And so he said to me, "What can you do for this?" And I said, "Well, how does this sound?" And so we had about a dozen boys come over, and we did some chemistry activities with batteries. But there were no batteries in the activity.
Right.
We made the batteries
yeah.
using... copper and zinc nails and bananas, and then that's the fun way. And then we did it the chemist's way, which is to use solutions of copper solution and zinc solution with the appropriate nails, and you can build what we call a wet cell. Put them in series, and we lit diodes.
Cool.
Which was
See,
really a lot of fun.
Is that like a Baghdad battery kind of thing? Isn't that what the Baghdad battery was? Kind of like a citrus
Yeah, that would be the equivalent where you use, say, lemon juice or some other acidic, and then different types of metal that you put in there, and you can generate a current.
Like that's, have you seen that? Where those, like,
I haven't seen
they would make them in like clay pots. That's like the Arab. I can't think of the word for it, but like they found all these pots with like remnants inside of citrus and other immaterials.
But they were making batteries so they could run.
Yeah, and so then they call them Baghdad batteries. Basically, electricity system. Well, they made them on Mythbusters, and they made it like Ark of the Covenant kind of looking. And because I don't know if they still know what the application was for these batteries.
Oh, these are old archaeological.
Oh, yeah. And they made them on Mythbusters, and so was Jamie, or the main guy. He goes up, and they had it, because, you know, with electricity, you have to have, like, 2 points to...
Yep.
They had the statues on top of the Ark of the Covenant.
Oh,
and so he goes up, and he really thought it would be like if I was to, like, touch you after rub my socks in the carpet. And he grabs it, and he's like, oh! Like, and he got, like, a huge jolt from it. And he, like, pulled one of them off, because the jolt was so bad. Ooh, and it was all just, like, a clay pot with different mixtures in it that they would have been able to use Bedouins walking around out in the desert.
Crazy.
So that's what you were saying, that with the batteries. That's,
well, that's sort of what we're doing, only in a little more controlled environment lot safer.
I remember doing the science badges we blow, because even though science wasn't like my thing in high school, I love science as like a hobby kind of thing. I like knowing things. I like the exploration of how things work, and I remember that was the first time I watched a guy with a bucket full of blocks, and then he, like, spun the bucket around, and blocks will fall out. You know, so then I went home and did it with a baby carriage. No,
it didn't work out so well.
And then I remember him putting, like, a sheet, like a plastic sheet over a cup of water, and then tipping it upside down, and the water didn't come out.
Right.
It stuck to it.
Right.
And those are the things I remember.
Stick
like,
you.
It would stick with me. Yeah.
Yep.
And that's it's just awesome.
And those are some of the things that we kind of have in store for our STEM merit badge challenge. I mean, really, yours is going to be an all day merit badge.
Right. We figure to do it well, and to have lots of hands on engagement, we're going to use both of the time periods, and go through the chemistry activities. And but we have other badges that are just in one session, like the soil and water conservation and astronomy. And then we have one on digital technology, followed in the afternoon by programming or vice versa, whichever.
Yeah, and those are really filling up. The digital technology is one of the newer merit badges.
And I think that's almost full already.
It has two spots left.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's filling up really.
And by the time this airs, it'll probably be full.
It might be.
I wish I could take these merit badges.
Well, you can be there.
I can be there, but I can't get a badge at the end of the day.
Yeah,
we can
gonna
use extra help.
Oh,
at some point
definitely.
That day, because we want to be a part of that. We want to see.
We want to put citrus in a clay pot.
You bring the pot, I'll bring the orange juice. Okay?
That should be our thing. Is we make a Baghdad battery. We can make one. I mean, if the Bedouins did it, we can do it, right?
I would hope so.
And I haven't been as part of the planning as Ian has been, but I'm excited for this event.
No, I think, you know, even we just had a meeting last night, and we were talking to some of the professors that are going to be our merit badge counselors and some of the other committee members that we have, and I let them know that we already have 32 boys signed up. And for the first year, and being 2 weeks out, it's a really good number.
Yeah,
that's really
cool.
Encouraging. So I think we're just going to add to it. And I think the number of merit badges, if they all show up on that date, if we stop registration right now, it would be over 50 merit badges will be given out that day, which is pretty
awesome.
That is. This is something that has taken a long time. I know we've done, I said 6 months, but we've probably been doing this a lot longer than that.
Well, and conceptual-wise, this is probably about a year and a half that we've put into it.
Right.
When we first started conversations with Bob and
just
kind of building out, you know, laying out our plans.
Yep. And now it's happening. It's on the books. We got the food scheduled. Sodexo's going to help us out with that.
We got the rooms.
all reserved. It's going to be great. We have the ballroom. We're going to actually have a keynote speaker. We don't know who that's going to be quite yet, but we do have two people in line. So we're going to have the admissions folks here at St. Ambrose. They're going to be available to talk to parents and scout leaders and the boys as well. We're going to have a portion during the day where we're going to have different types of engineers there. They're going to be presenting some information so that you can, that these boys can actually see the applications of all this that they're getting throughout the day. Hey, how can I make this into a career? How is this applicable? I'm really hoping that these boys, these scout leaders, these parents come away with it and think, I want to do that again, and I want to tell more people about it. Because this is a partnership that, honestly, I couldn't believe we didn't have going, you know, that we didn't have it.
The resources available here are just, and we've had a long-standing relationship. We've had individual professors serving as merit badge counselors for specific badges, personal fitness.
Right.
But as a result of the STEM information that went out, we have others from the business college who are interested in the personal finances or something. So we see this as perhaps we're going to spread it out a little more. I don't know whether that would be two different sessions or just expand the one.
Right.
But it there's more to STEM than STEM. I mean, a field like chemistry is so diverse in what direction you can do. You can do forensics. You can do medicine and healthcare. You can go into manufacturing and quality assurance. But the legal profession, what do you think patents are? It requires scientific understanding to be involved there. And there's other things as well. And so the STEM degrees are not just a single path on where you're going to go. You can turn.
I know. And
I mean,
we talked about that. We talked about that last week, how people hear STEM, and it's really the buzzword. That buzzword is just going around everywhere.
Right.
But it's not just limited to, I mean, science is huge.
Right.
Well, even that first, the S, is huge. It's you can use it across so many different things. So to say that STEM is limiting, it's not.
No.
You can apply it in almost everything we do.
Well, if you look at, like, okay, so, like, last night, I spent most of my evening drawing. And I've been doing this thing. And drawing is all math. You know what I mean? It's all math. And lines and, and it's all math. And then coloring, you know what I mean? That's all science. Mixtures of color and light and, you know what I mean? And that's, like, so when I'm mixing paint and all that, that's all science. You know what I mean? That's all on how.
Right.
And, you know, so that's like the little things. Everything has science involved in it somewhere, and it's just cool what the application is.
And another angle to that is I went to science and technology schools, public and private, and now I'm at a liberal arts college.
Yeah.
And so when I interact with my colleagues in other disciplines outside of this building, which is the it's amazing to see a different perspective that normally I would say, well, there's only one way to think about this.
Right.
And so even though you might have that training, your ability to engage someone else in it from a different direction, because even within the sciences, the new work is being done where disciplines join each other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For example, one that's rather mature right now was biology and chemistry became biochemistry.
Yep.
And now with nanotechnology, we have chemistry, materials, science, and physics all coming together to develop new things. And so the more varied and diverse your perspective and your training, you're going to be able to find yourself in these interfaces between disciplines. And
well, think 15 years ago, so 1999, I bought Weird Al's newest album on a cassette tape.
He's copying.
You had
cassette tape.
You had six tracks on each side,
and
you could not just go to a song. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you had to rewind. You had to. That was 15 years ago. Now, you can have every song you ever want on a thing that's in my pocket. You know what I mean?
That's, and I can put the size of a little bit bigger than a stamp. Really? Yeah. I mean, it's a little. iPod Nano is just a little bit bigger than a stamp.
And it's every song you ever wanted to hear ever.
And you can have it in seconds.
And so, what's 15 years from now going to be?
Yeah.
What's 15 years from now going to be?
That's one thing I learned in working for the Navy. We would do 5-year, 10-year projections on where we thought our technology was going and where we thought the threat technology was going. We usually did pretty well for 5 years because that's just evolutionary technology. Right. Mm-hmm. We're just building on what we have. But every time we tried to anticipate beyond that, a revolution occurred. Something totally different came on the scene. And the beauty of it is you're not only doing this every 5 years, you do it each year. So you see the glimmerings that these things are going to happen, and you can start responding and developing and whatnot. But where we're going to be in 15 years, I wouldn't even try to go that far.
Well, if you think, like...
Because I'll be wrong. I know that.
Next year is 2015. And in 2015, that is when Back to the Future 2 takes place.
Right.
This week they announced somebody made a hoverboard and it functions and it works. Hoverboard. Like, so now... Okay, so it's 2014. We have a skateboard that hovers off the ground. What happens in 2030? You know what I mean? Like, we have right now, we have a skateboard. What happens in 2030?
Yeah.
Oh.
You can't even predict that far in advance.
No, it's impossible. No.
Who would have thought in 1985 that they would have, 30 years later, would have actually had a hoverboard?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that was science fiction.
They were totally playing in fiction. That's what they were doing.
That's what they thought.
Now it's come to
one thing that I've known, I remember in 1969, there was a thing called Weekly Reader in schools.
Yeah.
And the one we got was the 70s. And it's like, what's going to happen in the 70s? And it had all this stuff because Star Trek, the original TV series, was running. And so it had a lot of stuff like automatically sliding doors and in your home.
Right.
And the thing is we have sliding doors. It's just
it
hasn't percolated down to the everyday level. That's all. And so it's more a matter of the technology keeps going.
Yeah.
And there's stuff out there that'll blow your mind.
Yeah.
But developing applications that are accessible to people in general, that's the real challenge. But one example is, who would have thought being a cell phone repairman or a cell phone tower rigger was a job?
Right.
15 years ago, that job didn't really exist. This is the power of a vibrant technological economy and society. Is we don't have buggy whip makers anymore, but we have cell tower repairmen instead.
Right.
And that's the power of the economy and the technology fusing together.
Yeah.
Well, they said 15 years ago, no one had ever asked, where are you, when you talk to someone on a phone.
Right. They knew.
That's excellent.
You know what I mean?
Excellent.
Where are you? And it's like, I'm in my house. Where are my home phone?
What number did you call?
I have a cord that allows me to walk 4 feet. It's like, it's crazy. Well, I know that we could truly talk about this.
We could.
We have three questions that we ask all of our guests. And our first question is, what is your favorite current TV show?
Oh, current TV show. I like Elementary.
Okay.
I enjoy reading the Conan Doyle stories.
Now, do you
about
watch
Sherlock Holmes?
Sherlock.
Yeah.
That? I love Sherlock, but there's like three episodes a year.
Yeah.
So it takes a while.
Long.
I
agree. That's definitely. I consider that more of a movie.
Yes.
Okay.
Rather than a TV show. But now that I love, and I have a colleague here who's a big Holmesophile or whatever. And so we talk every time the episode comes out, we chat. So I enjoy those. And I suppose in idle moments, I enjoy Big Bang Theory because it's funny. And what makes it funny for me is when I went to Caltech, I knew people like that.
Just like that.
And so they really nail some of the idiosyncrasies of unusual people. So
I thought maybe the show that you might relate with would be Breaking Bad.
I don't have cable. But you know, my colleagues told me all about it.
chemistry teacher starts making meth.
Right.
You know, that's always the...
And one of the most popular shows on TV because of the plot. I mean, it really was.
And they always, my favorite thing now is they're saying the plot of Breaking Bad in Canada would be, I have cancer, and then they're like, here's your treatment. In America, it's, I have cancer, I have to make meth.
To get money.
Oh, man.
All right, so our second question is if you could have any job, dream job, outside of the one that you have or
so
one that
you're starting
had,
all over again,
what would it be?
I suppose I might like to be a chef.
No kidding.
A pastry chef, because it's all applied chemistry. Baking is very much more a chemical, and some of the, just it allows a venue of creativity that and you get to eat it.
Well, you know, most things in chemistry.
Well, I think that would be kind of, most of the things we do we don't get to eat. In fact, they're not even appealing, but I think something like that might be...
That'd be cool. So do you bake, then? Do you...
I have a handful of recipes that I cook that I always tweak a little bit this way or that.
Yeah.
But I think the in baking, you know whether it works or not. If it doesn't rise, if you get a brick, things like that. But some of the... I think that could be a lot of fun.
That's cool.
I have a couple recipes that I tweak. Like sometimes if I let the macaroni noodles not boil as long as it tells me they're a little tougher and I like them. I like them to have a little bit more of a chew.
Chewy.
Yeah, like I like that. And so I tweak the recipe a little bit, you know, and then
a little more water, a little less.
But this is another thing though. 15 years ago, who would have thought that we'd have cakes that are photorealistic, you know, like sculptures of people and things like that.
Yeah.
Like who would have, like, they have cakes that have, like, working pinwheels on them, and you can eat them. Like, how crazy is that?
I know. I remember when digital cameras started to catch on, you know, and thinking, so I don't have to take the film out? You know, and I have the results right here. I can delete it. If I don't like it, I can just do it. I remember that wasn't too long ago. I mean, that was, we were graduating college, so that was 2004, 2005.
Well,
somewhere around there was catching on.
I started the Potato Head Project in 2005, and my first... like the White House and Disney World stuff, I didn't know what the pictures looked like until I got them home.
Yeah,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, and now I take like four or five, and I can have them posted on Facebook before I get in the car.
In seconds.
Well, I'll tell you, when I was at Eastman Kodak in the late 70s, they had the first prototype digital cameras then.
No kidding.
And
you had to shake it to get it in the belt.
But it truly was amazing, but the resolution wasn't there.
Yeah.
See, with a 35-millimeter slide, you can enlarge it, enlarge it, enlarge it. And it's at the nanostructure level that you can make an image. But digital now, as the megs go up, you just get better and better. But the power of it, instantly viewing it and being able to transmit it anywhere you want to send it, that is power.
Well, there I was hearing this thing the other day about when they go through and they're remastering these old shows for Blu-ray.
Mm.
Because, like...
Oh,
when they were filmed, they were shot on film,
right?
And they're like, you just can't put that on Blu-ray because it would look horrible.
Yeah,
you know, so they have to go through and like I was telling you, Pee Wee's Playhouse came out like this week, and they said that they filmed it on film, and then they edited it on film, and then they showed it on videotape. So now you've already had like six like films that it, or you know like blurs that it has gone through, and they're like, if you would have put that in high def, it would just look horrible. Like, it wouldn't even be worth watching.
Well, just colorizing is disturbing, because I saw it in black and white.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, that's not what color it is.
It's crazy.
It's color stuff.
I don't know what our last question is.
I do. If you could meet anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, meet anyone.
Dead, alive, fictional, and have a meal with them, who would you meet and what would you eat?
I would say my scientific curiosity would yield to my inner faith, and I would want to have a meal with Christ.
Yeah.
And bread and wine sounds good.
That's not a bad meal.
That's
right?
Not a bad meal. But just, I think encountering him would be beyond description.
Right.
So for me, I think that would be awesome.
And then would you be like, so at the molecular level,
yeah, what water, happened here?
When water becomes wine.
I said, can I get a sample of that before and after?
You're like, when you displace your weight so that you don't go through the water. Well, yeah. When you
well, no, I mean, there's a lot of, there is curiosity there, but also just strictly from a faith perspective.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we all, as we walk in our faith, we all have questions, doubts, and whatnot, and that would be just so affirming.
Right, right.
To have that experience.
Andy, awesome. Thank you so much for taking time out of your morning.
You bet.
Today.
This has been a lot of fun.
I know we could
come back anytime.
And talk. And I know we get brief little conversations in those meetings.
Right.
And we're definitely going to stay in touch. Even after, hopefully this goes off successful, even after that, we're going to continue and build this relationship and see where we can take it.
Well,
because I think there's a lot of
planning for next year.
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you.
Well, Doctor, thank you very much.
Okay.